what we're doing and what we're trying to do is save lives.
The police commissioner of the city of New York, Raymond Kelly, speaking on ABC News last weekend, would have you believe that but for the stop and frisk approach of the NYPD, you, regular law-abiding New Yorker, might have been the victim of a violent crime. Saving lives, Commissioner Kelly argues, justifies a policy that a federal judge declared this month was unconstitutional. Unconstitutional because it casts people as suspicious on the basis of police hunches or mere conjecture. According to the judge, it was racial profiling, plain and simple. Stop and frisk purports to plant in the mind of people on the street the idea that they may be stopped at any time. And so the theory goes, they think twice before carrying a weapon, planning to commit a crime. The sense of being watched restrains those who would break the law. Well, this may all be a bit abstract for judges and police commissioners. What about someone who is actually a victim of crime? Is their suspicion about the people around them mere conjecture or xenophobic profiling? There's really no reason why young Brian Beutler is alive today. He was shot three times on a poorly lit street in northwest Washington, D.C. 5 years ago by two young black men who tried to steal his cell phone, a city where there is no stop-and-frisk policy. What he believes about the value of stop-and-frisk and profiling might just surprise you. Listen.
I wouldn't recommend anybody repeat my steps exactly as I took them. I remember, I know that for months after it happened, as I was recovering, I wanted the worst for those kids. I wanted them to get caught, and I wanted them to go to jail, and I wanted them to spend a very long time there. But I also think that, you know, the kids who approached us until the moment that they confronted us and asked for our phones were doing exactly what my friend and I were doing, which was walking around a neighborhood, a well-populated neighborhood, late at night. I don't think that the fact that they were black and wearing hoodies would have been appropriate grounds for a police officer to stop them and frisk them, even though, as it turns out, this would have been the 1 in 1,000 chance that they would have stopped somebody for doing nothing apparently wrong and found a gun. And I would have been all the better off for it.
So is it racial profiling to assume that all African-American men wearing hoodies on Euclid Avenue at 1 in the morning are likely shooters?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, you know, I walked up and down Euclid Street maybe 400 times between when I moved into D.C. and when that happened. And I did that during the day. I did it very late at night. I did it alone. I did it with friends. I did it drunk. I did it sober. I, on many of those occasions, crossed paths with young black men because there are a lot of them who live in the area and who hang out in the area. And all of those times, I reached my destination without incident. And I think that what happened in July was an extremely unlucky scenario for me.
But to attempt to protect ourselves, we always engage in an assessment of probabilities, right? We try to figure out what place is more vulnerable than another based on a whole variety of characteristics. We play our odds when we walk around in cities, right?
Yeah.
At what point does that probability calculation become an expression of racism or a socially destabilizing set of judgments about our neighbors and possible friends who live amongst us?
I don't think that there's an easy answer to that question. You know, I think that a lot of people will probably cross the street and lock their car doors under circumstances that are very clearly safe to others, and that the people who do that probably have biases that inflate the risks assessments that they're making in their own heads. That being said, I would distinguish between steps people take, you know, obviously within the bounds of the law to keep themselves feeling safe, and what law enforcement does or what policymakers do to combat that risk or to reduce it, and specifically when you're talking about detaining or questioning or frisking people who are apparently not in the midst of any suspicious activity. So it makes sense in my mind for law enforcement to deploy a lot of resources to areas where there's more crime statistically than other areas. But that doesn't mean that when people are minding their own business in those neighborhoods that they should be at any higher risk for being stopped, detained, frisked. Before they approached us, there was nothing that the kids were doing on the street that the friend and I walking towards Adams Morgan weren't also doing. We were out late at night. We were joking with each other. And
I understand,
I don't think that the police in D.C. or New York would have stopped and frisked the two white kids. And I'm saying this as somebody who could have benefited if a stop and frisk policy had been in place and those two kids had been stopped prior to doing anything suspicious looking. I would be fine.
So you agree that stop and frisk could have prevented you from being shot if those young men, rightly or wrongly, had an expectation that they were likely to get stopped and frisked on that street at the same moment that you were probably unlikely to get stopped.
Oh, sure, I agree. Just like I understand that about every 1,000 stop, question, frisk incidents in New York City results in the confiscation of a weapon. I realize that invariably you do enough of these things, you're going to stop something from happening that would have happened anyway. But is a 1 in 1,000 batting average really the right way to deploy your law enforcement resources when, A, you could probably find other ways of combating crime that are more effective, and, B, not have these 999 other incidents where what you've done is just told somebody who's minding their own business and abiding the law that the police are going to treat them like criminals, and they're not going to trust the police to protect them.
All right. So you're a person. Let's just review the bidding here. You are a person who's been shot 3 times by two men you can't identify, but you are reasonably sure they are young black males wearing hoodies, right?
100% on that.
100% on that. You would probably not go down that road again under similar circumstances and would not recommend that others do the same. You don't think that taking that step is racial profiling, right?
No, I don't.
And you admit that a stop and frisk policy, an aggressive stop and frisk policy in that neighborhood might have prevented you from the injuries that almost killed you.
That's correct.
And yet your lesson to us all is stop and frisk is a bad idea.
Yep, that basically covers it. Even though my particular situation might have been averted if police had just been stopping and frisking people who appeared to be minding their own business, that's just an expression of the fact that, you know, almost like a stop clock is right twice a day. This would have been the one time in a very large pool of times that they stopped and frisked somebody who wasn't seeming to be doing anything wrong, who was actually intending to go commit a crime. Mm-hmm. But most of the time that won't happen. And the price of living in a free society is that some small percentage of people will fall victim to that kind of crime. And I'm, unfortunately for myself, fall into that pool of people. That doesn't necessarily mean that I think that it was right that it was me as opposed to somebody else. I would have loved to have avoided this, but it didn't really change the way I think about how, yeah, we order resources or treat people of different races in the cities we all share.
Brian Beutler is a writer for Salon. He spoke to us from Washington, D.C., where he still lives. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
Before we go, once more on the question of, have you seen your doctor this year?
I'm Lexi from Tampa, Florida. I only go to the doctor when I'm sick. I never go for a checkup because I'm young and in good health, and I don't see the need.
Good for you there, Lexi, but disagreement on that from Augusta, Georgia. As an active duty military member, I'm required to get semi-regular doctor's checkups. As a result, I've been warned of high triglycerides, cholesterol, and counseled to change lifestyle habits. I've seen their clear benefits. We'd love to know what you think. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.